Hey, it's Scott Petrick with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. After eight practices in West Virginia, the Browns and I are back, and we're only getting started. They practice in Berea on Tuesday and will open the NFL preseason Thursday night in Canton in the Hall of Fame game. And that doesn't include Joe Thomas's Hall of Fame enshrinement Saturday. Here to discuss it all, as always, is Dave Chudowski of GO, the WKYC Morning News. What's up, Chud?
Scott, welcome back from West Virginia. It's good to have you back home where you belong.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Hey, can you believe it's here? I mean, I remember when this first came out and we talked about it and how the Browns would get in this game and Joe Thomas. And it's a big deal this week. Pretty exciting, man. Are you ready?
Yeah, I think so. You know, first of all, the football part, right? We're getting ready for a preseason game. You know, yeah, a lot of the big names, or none of the big names, really are going to play. But it's still football. You get to see the young guys, some guys competing for roster spots. Certainly the young quarterbacks, Kellen Mond and Dorian Thompson-Robinson, will play a half each. And then you have the Hall of Fame. And I've never covered a Hall of Fame enshrinement. I talked to Joe Thomas on Sunday, just actually as I was getting back from West Virginia. He called me. So we talked, and I'm working on that story right now. I'm hoping to get it posted either later this afternoon or tomorrow morning. Just about, you know, I've written so much about Joe. I wanted to talk about the run-up to this, you know, the run-up to his enshrinement. You know, it feels like he's on the celebration tour. He went to Germany. He went to Machu Picchu. He's doing all this stuff with his kids. And I just wanted to talk to him about that, the hecticness of it all, what he's thinking about as the big day is approaching. So, yeah, so there's a lot of stuff coming up in the next few days. And not to mention, Jim Brown will have a memorial service Thursday at 1 o'clock in Canton. I think all the Hall of Famers that are going to be in town are going to attend the memorial service. It's a combination of the Browns and the Hall of Fame putting it on. And obviously a somber occasion, but I think it's going to be more of a celebration of Jim Brown's life, his Hall of Fame career, just what he meant to the game of football and the Browns. And that's going to kind of kick off these 3 days in Canton.
Yeah, let's kind of work backwards here. I was thinking about going Greenbrier first and working back to the enshrinement. Let's go the other direction since you just had a lot of great things to say there. And number one, cheap plug here. Yeah, we're taping this on Wednesday. Tune into Channel 3 tonight, the sports department. Jimmy Donovan, Yak, sports director, Nick Camino, and the rest of the crew did a great job putting together this hour special. It's at 7 on Channel 3 tonight. And if you're a Browns fan and a Joe Thomas fan, it's a must watch. It's going to be live, but I've seen the rundown, so that's why I know it's a must watch. And it's going to be really good. And then tomorrow morning, I'll be live down at the hall for GO, yeah, for the morning show. I'll be live from 5 to 7 down there. I put a piece together on the Hall of Fame and a couple other things. So, you know, definitely we're your place to be TV side of things for the Browns and Joe Thomas this week. And we've had crews down there live all week. But I guess, you know, what can you say about Joe that everyone doesn't know, Scott? And we've talked a lot about him, right? But the one thing, and you and I talked about it, I think the thing that I admire most about him, and it's the thing that he's most proud of, is that consecutive snaps. And, you know, when he retired, we got a chance to listen to him talk to some kids. And I remember him talking about three things, you know, that were key in life. And I wrote them down, and I can't find where I wrote them down, but it really resonated with me because one of the things he talked about was just being there, just showing up. And it really resonated with me because, you know, I did not miss days in high school. I hated missing days, getting behind. I really believe in being at practices and not missing work unless I have to. And that resonated with me because I just think it's so important in life, is just showing up and being there. You never know what you might miss or what you might get out of being there. And I think that's the main thing about him, man, is he was so accountable for his teammates.
Oh, there's no doubt, Chud. And like you said, that's the thing that he is most proud of, that 10,363 consecutive snap streak, which everyone believes is the longest in NFL history. It's so unprecedented that I'm not sure anybody before kept track of this is how many snaps you have going. And then, you know, someone realized at some point, man, Joe hasn't missed one. So you started counting them all up. Yeah, he was super proud of that. And yeah, it's as well as he played, right? And he's an all-timer, obviously. He's a Hall of Famer, right? But like he's in the upper echelon of all-time left tackles, even among the Hall of Famers, just because he was physically gifted and he's so precise and he worked so hard and he was a, you know, he studied so hard. But what separates Joe is the ability to play, to be there every snap for his team. It's not just every game, it's every snap. And it was on bad teams where it would have been easy to cash it in and say, hey, I'm done for the year. I don't need to finish this game. It came despite just immense pain. And I wrote about this right before Joe got inducted, you know, in February. And just the pain that he endured and getting him to talk about the worst of it. You know, and he had back spasms. I think he told me for weeks at a time his back would spasm. And yet he figured out a way to play. You know, he couldn't tie his shoes. His wife, Annie, had to tie his shoes. He couldn't practice for like the last couple of years. He rarely, if ever, practiced. He said it hurt him, his knee at this point. It was, you know, he was battling everything, but the knee in particular, that when he had to stand up and talk to the media for 15 minutes a week, he was in so much pain afterward that he would have to go straight to the trainer's table and like lay down, because standing for 15 minutes hurt him so much. Yet he could go out and play 60, 70 snaps at a Pro Bowl level. Every game he played in his NFL career was at a Pro Bowl level, right? He's a 10-time Pro Bowler, all 10 full seasons until that triceps tore, you know, in his 11th and final season. So just the stuff he endured to be able to play, you know, all NFL players are warriors to some degree, right? They're all hurt. That's what we hear. You know, from the first day of training camp, everybody's injured. He took it about 25 levels past everyone else.
Yeah, no question. And he'll be the last one to be presented, to be enshrined on Saturday. You had mentioned you never covered one. I have. And man, I did one when it was at night and they were so long. But now they try to get those speeches down to 10 to 12 minutes. But I look forward to hearing what he has to say on Saturday.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great speech. And, you know, on top of that, and this is part of the story I'm working on, you know, his wife, Annie, and their kids are going to present Joe. And now you don't have to give – the presenter doesn't get up and give a speech. It's a video presentation. You know, they film clips. So you're not putting the kids under pressure of getting up there and, you know, speaking this microphone, a full crowd. You know, you can do takes. And then they kind of, you know, splice together this video presentation. So he is so excited about that. And he said, you know, he could have picked an old offensive line coach, George Warhop. He could have picked Mitchell Schwartz or Alex Mack or John Greco, some of his favorite teammates that were also on the offensive line. He said he could have picked his dad. He could have picked Browns owner Jimmy Haslam. But Annie and the kids have meant the most to him, and they helped him get through the tough times, right? When the Browns are going 1-15 and Joe's coming home really emotional and depressed and worn out, they were the ones that uplifted him. And Annie was there the entire time. You know, they know each other from their days together at the University of Wisconsin, get married early. And then the kids come along and they become part of this support system. So he's really proud that they're going to present him. He said he was in church on Sunday before he came into Cleveland. He called me when he got to Cleveland Sunday afternoon. He said Sunday morning he's in church in Wisconsin and they were talking after church and the people in front of him like, hey, who's presenting you? And he's like, you're looking at him. And he just felt so proud to be able to say that. So I think the whole thing's going to be really cool.
That is such a great family guy. And, you know, he's going to enter the hall like he entered the NFL. You know, when he was drafted, he wasn't in New York. He wasn't at the draft. He was with his family fishing, right, with his dad.
Right. So, yeah. And that's so, how we knew who he was going to be, right? That from the draft day when he chose not to go to New York. And be on the fishing boat, it told you a lot about who Joe was going to be.
I love how this Hall of Fame week, they do it now. I think it's, you know, it used to all be on Saturday, and then there was a time where the game and the enshrinement, and then you would have the enshrinement, you know, now they tape the presenters so they can kind of keep it to a certain time, right? You don't get someone up there to go on, and they want the actual players that are being enshrined to talk, like I said, around 10 to 12 minutes, whether they do or not, that's another thing. But, you know, in this day and age, no one wants to sit there for a million hours and listen, but they are great speeches to listen to. But it's cool. You have the game on Thursday. You have the Gold Jackets on Friday. And all the festivities that go. And I'm telling you, that Hall of Fame Village is really pretty sweet down there. So, Canton, props to Canton, and it's really become more than just a one day event. It's an all week deal. So, there you have it. So that obviously is Saturday. So let's go to tomorrow night, mm-hmm. and obviously the game. But I think it's nice to have football back, Scott. But let's be honest. I mean, as you had mentioned earlier and alluded to, we're not going to see the starters. You're not going to see Deshaun Watson. So what should we, as a football fan or a Browns fan, what should we really be looking for in this game?
Yeah, let's start at quarterback, just because you mentioned Watson, and he's not going to play, and Joshua Dobbs, the backup, isn't going to play. So it's going to be Kellen Mond the first half. Now, the Browns claimed him off waivers at the end of the preseason last year. So he hasn't played at all for the Browns, right? So he didn't play last preseason because he wasn't here. He was with Minnesota. He was a former third-round pick of the Vikings in 2021. So relatively highly thought of. The Browns actually, obviously thought something of him if they claimed him on waivers. But he didn't play at all, last season, and he wasn't here in time to play in the preseason. So this is his first time in a Browns uniform. It'll be interesting. My assumption is that the rookie Dorian Thompson Robinson is going to win that number three quarterback job. But if he doesn't, it's because Kellen Mond outplays in practice and in the preseason. So I think there's a little bit of a battle going on there between Mond, who's going to play the first half, and then Thompson Robinson, who's going to play the second half. Both of them have made plays during training camp. They've had their minuses as well, but they both made plays. They can both run. They're both athletic guys. So you got that from a quarterback perspective. Then you have the receivers they're going to throw to. And it's not going to be Amari Cooper, Donovan Peoples-Jones, or Elijah Moore. But I think you'll see Anthony Schwartz, who's trying to stick on this roster and has an opportunity because Marquise Goodwin has the blood clots, right, and is unable to practice. We don't know if he's going to be able to play at all this year. And he was supposed to be that speed threat, the guy that stretches the field, vertically. And if he's not there, Anthony Schwartz has the closest skill set, right, because he's a, Olympic-quality sprinter as well. So it's been disappointing for two seasons. He's been hurt a lot, was hurt to start camp, but now he's playing, he's healthy. I think you're going to see him out there. And if he can put a preseason together, maybe he can pull the upset and win a roster spot, which I still think is unlikely, but I would not rule it out, especially being a former third-round pick of this regime. Dalen Baldwin has been a receiver that stood out to me last year in training camp, and then spent time on the practice squad last year, played a little bit at the end of the season after injuries hit. I think he's looked really good in training camp so far. Then you have the rookie, Cedric Tillman. The third-round pick was a Browns' first pick in the draft this year, even though it came in the third round. How does he do in his first NFL action? And there's other receivers. Austin Watkins Jr., who they picked up out of the USFL. See how these guys go because, I think we know most of the guys that are going to make the receiver – make the roster at receiver. I think there's some uncertainty at the bottom of that group, and these guys are going to get their chance on Thursday night against the Jets. Do we see Jerome Ford? Kevin Stefanski didn't say. He wouldn't tell us on Wednesday or on Tuesday when we talked to him. He's going to be your number two back, so I could see them not playing him. But he only got 8 carries last year all season. So maybe they want to get him some rest. If not, then it's a battle for that third running back spot. Dimitri Felton, Hassan Hall, the undrafted rookie, John Kelly Jr., who's been on the practice squad for on a couple of years now. And then it's all young guys, Chubb, right? Like Stefanski said, there'll be some veterans at play. And in my mind, that's guys like Schwartz and Felton. But then it's a lot of first and second year guys. See how they do. DeJuan Jones, right? The rookie tackle out of Ohio State had a rough start to rookie minicamp, thrown up on the sidelines, was not in shape. How does he handle the action? Does he, is his stamina good enough? Does he hold up? He'll probably play right tackle, I would assume. Does he hold up at either tackle spot? So it's a lot of rookies. It's a lot of young guys. And, I don't think you can read too much into, here's Kevin Stefanski's new offense, right, because Deshaun Watson's not going to be out there. But maybe you see glimpses, right? Maybe Mond or DTR runs a little bit of option. which you're going to see from Deshaun Watson. Maybe they go a lot of shotgun. So it's just going to be interesting to see the first live action, especially because the Browns don't hit a bunch in training camp, right? They don't tackle. And we're going to see that. We're going to see live action for the first time.
It's almost kind of cliche. I hate to say it. I hate when I hear others say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. These guys are tired of facing each other, right? They want to face someone else. And you kind of saw that there at the end of the Greenbrier practice, right? A little fight action.
Yeah, you did. And it's interesting, Chuck, because I mentioned that they don't hit a lot, right? But it's still, you know, they're still practicing against each other. It's still competitive. And I think that's where it is, right? It's the competition over the offseason program, and then you get to training camp, and it's day in and day out. And the practice you're alluding to at the Greenbrier, it's the eighth practice in 9 days. They had pads on the two previous days. They didn't have pads on Sunday, but it was a full practice. There's a lot of competitive periods. And you know, the emotions built. And it's like Kevin Stefanski said, he tries to discourage any kind of fighting, right? Because he doesn't want guys getting hurt. He wants guys to take care of each other, but he knows that it's part of it. And, you know, like, for example, when the first skirmish started, the defense was kicking the offense's butt. And they won this period. I don't think the offense had a positive play. And a lot of that was because Myles Garrett was beating Jedrick Wills, the left tackle, Jedrick Wills Jr., over and over. On the other side, Ogbo Okorocro was beating James Hudson, who was in there because Jack Conklin had the day off at right tackle. So I think the line was getting frustrated. And on that last play, you know, Garrett does a spin move. Wills has no clue what he's like, right? I mean, he just gets beat so bad, he kind of throws his back at Garrett. It would have been a sack. Watson steps up, throws what almost was an interception, even though it would have been a sack. And on the other side, Hudson is kind of pushing Obo around the edge. I don't know if he would have gotten to Watson. It was tough to tell. But then he kind of pushes him into the ground. He pushes Obo's back, and Obo goes in the ground. And he gets up, and Obo slaps Hudson. It was a weird reaction, right? Like, it almost felt like, hey, I kicked your butt for this whole possession. You know, like, I owned you, kind of slap. And I think right away he knew it was a bad idea because he took off running away from Hudson, and Hudson wasn't having it. So Hudson chases after him. Obo turns around, squares up, and then Hudson just clocks him in the helmet. And then they have to be separated. And then a couple plays later, there's a skirmish. Tyrone Wheatley Jr., who's been playing well, it's a second-team left tackle, gets caught under the pile, gets up limping, has to go leave practice. He wanted to practice, and yesterday was limited. Still looked like the knee was – I think it was a knee. Bothered him some, but he was out there, which is a good sign. But then there's a pile of players. They have to be separated. Stefanski makes everybody run. Gives them a player only talking to, then leaves, and the players kind of work it out themselves after that. So it's not to be unexpected, but it's still a little jarring when you see it and you see that punch thrown, because you're supposed to control your emotions, right? You're not allowed to throw punches in the game. So there's probably a happy medium there with how much emotion you can show, how fed up you can be, and then, hey, we're not going to cross this line.
Dude. Overall, how'd the second half of the Greenbrier practices end up, and did the Browns accomplish what they set out to do in your mind? You were there for all the practices.
Yeah, it was. It ended pretty good. You know, they finally put the pads on, right? And we talked, I think, last week about the slow acclimation period. And it was, hey, we're going to get guys ramped up. They have extra time before, not only before the first preseason game, but before the season, right? So Kevin Stefanski wants to be real careful with the workload of everyone. So it was kind of slow to start, but then you get in pads and it increases the intensity. I thought one of my biggest takeaways, Chud, is I thought the defense outplayed the offense at the end of the time at the Greenbrier. And there was a red zone period, I think on the final practice, that the defense just owned. I mentioned that 11-on-11 that led to the fight where the defense owned. So I thought that was interesting. You know, because the offense has a lot of good players, but so does the defense, right? And I don't think that's necessarily a big knock on Deshaun Watson. I think it's, hey, the defense is pretty good. Maybe they're a step ahead. You know, the offense doesn't have its full arsenal when you're in the red zone. You don't run the ball. It's all throwing. The windows are tight. But I think it said something for the defense and for how Jim Schwartz hasn't coached up, because a lot of effort, a lot of intensity, And I think they're, you know, it's only practice, but playing at a pretty high level right now. You know, I thought some people stood out. Elijah Moore, we talked about last week, just the way different ways they're using him. He shows up and he's explosive. David Njoku had a good camp at the Greenbrier, the tight end. I mentioned Ty Wheatley stood out a little bit. Martin Emerson, the cornerback, I thought showed up on defense and on special teams as a gunner. So I think there are a lot of positives, and you know, it's hard to judge, right? Did the team bonding happen, right? It's hard to judge. But I think there were examples of it. Emerson talked about on their day off, they went and spent, he said he never went anywhere all week without another defensive back. And he said on their day off, they went to the pool together, they went bowling, they played video games. And there were plenty of examples of that when you talk to guys. And then, you know, I said we walked around the Greenbrier that one night and we walked by one of the restaurants. And right, it was next to the golf course. We were checking out the golf course. They're hosting Live this week. It was kind of cool to see the setup. Even though I'm anti-Live, Live Golf, it was kind of cool to see how it was all set up for it. But we walked by the restaurant in the clubhouse, and there was a table of like 10 Browns players, you know, sitting there eating. And I don't think that happens if they're in Berea, right? Because everybody goes their own separate ways. You go home, you go to the hotel. But the Greenbrier kind of had nothing else to do. So I do think it had some of the positive effects Kevin Stefanski was hoping for.
How was it to be back in Berea? What was the environment like for practice number one on Tuesday?
Yeah, it was cool. You know, I mean, you know, the fans want to be out there. To me, that's the only – well, that's the biggest drawback to moving camp to, you know, moving the start of camp to the Greenbrier is that you rob these diehard fans of 8 training camp practices. And as boring as those practices can be, we know the fans show up every day. We know there's certain fans that show up that themselves show up every day, right, just to watch training camp practice. I know they're excited about the autographs and all of it. So, you know, there was some energy there. It didn't feel like, you know, some day ones, Chud, where the excitement is off the charts and you kind of feel it early. I didn't get that same sense. I don't know if that was because they'd already started camp at the Greenbrier. So it wasn't like, man, this is the start of football. But there was still some buzz. I know, you know, everyone was excited to get autographs afterward. Luke Whippler, the rookie center, Za'Darius Smith were trying to pump up the crowd at different points in practice. There was certainly oohs and ahs when Cameron Mitchell intercepted Deshaun Watson, when Cedric Tillman made a diving catch in a 2-minute drill, when Cade York made a bunch of field goals. There was certainly reaction. So it was good to see everybody back together again. And that's kind of the comfort zone, right? Back in Berea, a training camp. So it was good to be home, let's say.
All right, let's get our Deshaun Watson update sponsored by Petrex Pebbles, your breakfast of champions. That's going to be our new sponsor for the Deshaun Watson portion, because we'll always have it. And you always need to eat your Petrex Pebbles, right, yeah, Scott?
Sure,
so,
sure.
Yeah. How are we looking there? I got an update from Alex Van Pelt, right?
Yeah. You know, the way I phrased it when I wrote it today was, or last night, like you talked about, the defense has been better than the offense the last few days. And they've made life difficult for Deshaun Watson with the pressure that the defensive line's getting, with some batted passes. You know, Dalvin Tomlinson, the D-tackle, broke up a screen yesterday. He read it right and got back and broke it up. With some breakups down the field, with the interception by Cam Mitchell. So it's been harder for Deshaun Watson. Having said that, Alex Van Pelt is pleased with the progress he's making. He feels like he built on what was a solid offseason program, right? And I thought Watson got better as the offseason program went along. We talked about that great practice he had. I think it was OTAs or the first minicamp practice. Van Pelt believes he's built on that with the start of camp. And I don't think he's wrong. There's been ups and downs. You see everything you need to see, right? You see the legs. You see the arm strength. You see the ball placement. He's made several big-time throws down the field, right? Intermediate and down the field, over the linebacker and head of the safety, right where it needs to be. You know, contested catches, he's put the ball where he needs to be. Now, it hasn't all been perfect. He'll make a great throw, and then there's a couple bad throws or a couple incompletions, or he's not on the same page with the receiver. The red zone has been tough, and a lot of that's given, you know, I think you can attribute some of that to circumstance, right? You can't hand off. He doesn't really scramble in these drills. But I think there's been enough positive signs to feel good about Deshaun Watson. Now it's just a matter of, can he continue that progress? Does it go throughout the rest of training camp? Does it show up when he plays in the preseason, whenever that is? I think we're going to see him next week against the Commanders. I don't think we're going to see him against Philly after those joint practices. And then I think you probably see him against Kansas City in the preseason finale. I mean, Kevin Stefanski hasn't announced any of this, but I would think you see Watson at least a little bit in those two games. And do you see that continued progress? Do you see that confidence continue to grow? I suspect you will. So it hasn't been perfect, but I think it's been good enough, and that's certainly what coordinator Alex Van Pelt was trying to convey yesterday.
Let's head over to the other coordinator, and you had just talked about the defense, Jim Schwartz. He wants the defense to lead the league in a pair of intangibles, huh?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how he phrased it. And, you know, we're still getting to know Schwartz a little bit. I mean, I know he used to be here back in the, you know, Belichick days, but I didn't cover him back then. So he's a lot of metaphors, a lot of analogies and similes and baseball references. And yesterday he talked about wanting to lead the league in effort and passion for the game. And, you know, obviously that's unquantifiable. But as a coach, you can tell if guys are playing hard, right? You can tell if guys want to be out there. And not only is it the aggressive style of Jim Schwartz that I think will have an imprint on this roster, it's the guys that GM Andrew Berry brought in this year, especially on the D-line. Hey, you can say the back end too, Juan Thornhill, the safety, Rodney McLeod, the safety. Those guys have a lot of energy, right? Juan Thornhill is a chirper. He's a tweeter, or whatever you call the former Twitter platform these days. He's got a lot of energy to him. Then you go to the front, and Za'Darius Smith has that. And like I said, he tried to get the crowd riled up yesterday. He's a talker. He's a hard worker, which rubs off. Dalvin Tomlinson maybe isn't as vocal, but he's a leader by example. He's got a great laugh. Guys gravitate toward him. Okoronkwo brings a lot of energy. So I think you can combine all of that with the talent up front, and you say, okay, this defensive line is probably going to lead this defense. It's talented. It's much improved. And it has some powerful forces. And I didn't even mention Myles Garrett, right, who's kind of his own powerful force in other ways, right, whether it's personality, mostly talent, the effortlessness with which he plays and succeeds when you watch him go through these training camp drills. I think that just fits. The Schwartz saying that just fits with his personality. And then I thought just another one of his references was, and he said, we're still making mistakes. It's early. We're not ready yet for the season. He goes, we're ready to practice. We're ready for the preseason, first preseason game. But he said, you know, there'd be bumps in the roads, but you want it to be like the S&P 500, where there's steady gains. There's gains and then a dip, but then better gains. And over time, it climbs. He goes, as opposed to like one of those cardiac readings that is really up and down, up and down, up and down. So he thinks his defense is heading that direction. He needs to see it come together more. You know, like I said, they've only been in pads three times. There needs to be more of that. But he likes the direction it's headed. And part of that is the style that they're going to play.
All right, Scott, I got four more things for you, but we got to get going here.
Let's
soon.
Go.
So we're going to put you on the clock. So can we do it in 30 seconds for each one?
Love it.
All right, let's do it. Number one, let's get a kicker Cade York update because we know how important that is around here.
Yeah, and that's a good question, Chud. He was perfect yesterday in the practice in Berea, 5 for 5 in the field goal period to start practice, 3 for 3 in the 2-minute drills where he needed a kick to force overtime. Looks good. They're trying to, Bubba DeVentro and the new coordinator is trying to get him to think less about mechanics and just go out and do it. And it feels like that's having an early impact.
Nice job. 20 seconds.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Well done. You already brought up Elijah Moore, but I wanted to ask you about him. And just quickly, obviously you have 30 seconds. Is the hype real? Because I know we had talked about him a couple weeks ago. I know in the fantasy world, the hype is real. In the real world, it seems like the hype is real. From what you've seen with your eyeballs, are you buying it?
I am, Chud. I think the optimism that the Browns have regarding Moore and the impact he can have on this offense is warranted. And I started to feel that way during the offseason, and training camp has only confirmed that for me. He explodes out of his stance. He's got good hands. He's a really good route runner. There's a couple of clips out there, and I had one of them on my Twitter feed about where he beat Denzel Ward with this, like, three triple move inside the red zone. He can do a lot of stuff, Chud. And I might go over 30 seconds here, but the way they use him out of the backfield is really intriguing. They're going to hand him the ball. He's going to play a little bit of running back. They're going to run some option with him, and then they're going to send him out as a receiver, and that's going to be really difficult. His triple threat out back there for the defense to match, right? The defense, I think, is going to be on its toes and not know what is coming when he's in the backfield. And I think that's an area where the Browns are going to find success.
Next one, injury update.
Yeah, there's nothing crazy. Matthew Ford, the linebacker special teamer, is out a couple of weeks at least with a calf injury. Greg Newsome, the second, the corner, left Tuesday's practice. I don't know what the injury was, but he didn't finish practice. I don't believe it's serious, but we're going to have to wait and see on that. Mike Ford, another special teamer. Like, Adams and Ford were two special teamers signed in the offseason. They both play defense, but their main thing is to be a mainstay on special teams. Ford looked like he hurt his lower leg yesterday, tried to stay in, couldn't, had to leave. We'll need an update on him. And then Tristan Hill, the D tackle's got a hand injury, was in a cast yesterday, didn't practice. And then Jordan Akins, a tight end. This is something to keep an eye on. The Browns signed him. They want him to be the number two tight end. They think he can help in the passing game. He hasn't practiced the last four practices. And Kevin Stefanski said it's rest and a knee. So he must have a bulky knee that they just want to rest. But this early in camp, for him to be missing as much time as he has, I think it's something to monitor.
And the last thing, since we spoke last, big injury for the Bengals, Joe Burrow, week one opponent, right? I mean, do you think we're going to see Burrow?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I do think we're going to see him, Chud. It was 6 weeks, right? I think from the time of the injury till now, or till the opener, right? The openers, I'm looking at my calendar right now, so I'm just going to count back from September 10th. It was 6 weeks, just over 6 weeks when he pulled up with that calf strain. That's a long time, right? 6 weeks. Wyatt Teller, I think, missed four weeks with the calf strain. He's a right guard. It's different. So I expect Joe Burrow to play the opener, but I don't know if it's guaranteed. And on top of that, he's not going to have the reps, right? He was looking forward to playing in the preseason for the first time. That's not going to happen. You take away all those training camp reps. So, well, I think he plays. I think it's, you know, from a Browns perspective, I think they're going to benefit from a lack of practice repetitions for Burrow.
Yeah. All right, well done. I think we got a lot in. Anything else you want to add before we sign off?
No, I think that's good, Chud. Have a good time in Canton. We'll both be in Canton in the next few days, but I don't think our paths are going to cross.
No.
You're a little earlier than I am. But yeah, good luck down there.
As well.
Thank you. We'll do this again next week. We'll have a preseason game to talk to. We'll have a second preseason game to preview. We'll have more practices. The Browns return to practice in Bury on Sunday. And then I think they go Sunday, Monday, Wednesday. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's the practice schedule next week. So fans will be out there. But yeah, we're into this now, right? Once you get that preseason game, Chud, you're into it, and you can kind of start counting down to that opener, like you mentioned, against Cincinnati.
Yeah, no question. I'll be here before you know it.
Yep. So thank you, Chud, as always. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Zone Coverage Podcast. And you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks so much.